you.
Not as tall, not as good looking, not as young. But well, forget all those deficiencies. This is a chapter from Gooseflesh, a crime novel set in London featuring Slim Gunter. And this chapter is almost slap bang in the middle of the book and is a fairly reflective chapter in some ways in a crime novel. It's not full of blood and guts, well, there is a bit of blood, but not full of blood and guts. And I should warn you, there is a little bit of swearing. I hope you're not too put out by that. Just to put it in some sort of context, Slim has been investigating the apparently innocent death of a young man, and it hasn't really gone anywhere. And he's been persuaded by various people to decease in his activities, and has done so. And then, just prior to this chapter taking place, his partner, Lady, gets knocked over by a motorbike. And as we join it, Slim and his associates, Eddie and Barclay, who we'll meet later in the chapter, have just heard the news that she's lying in the hospital, having been knocked down by somebody riding a motorcycle. And I don't think I need to say much more than that by way of introduction. And as we join it, Slim is in this sort of area, very close to King's Cross Station. The Scottish Rocket had its front door shut with a heavy metal chain and padlock, keeping the thirsty and the randy at bay for a few hours yet. I sat upstairs on a bus looking out of a window misted with condensation. By wiping the window with my handkerchief, I could see out well enough. Someone had etched the word slag into the glass with something like a craft knife or a glazier's cutter. I didn't want to be on a bus struggling up the Caledonian Road, but the taxi queue at King's Cross had been longer than a physics lesson, and the underground gates had the same sort of lock and chain affair as the grim striptease public house. Most of the other passengers on the bus were women, and young women at that. Some had children, folded pushchairs, or both, and wore expressions that moved from lassitude to boredom, to irritation and back again, as though there were only a limited range of looks available. I got the message when they all got off the bus opposite Pentonville Prison, where there was a similar crowd milling across the pavement. Ever faithful. Further along the journey, the bus lurched around a corner and pulled up outside Holloway Women's Prison. Nobody got on or off. I thought of asking Lady about that and what it said about men and women, but she probably wasn't too bothered about sexual politics, since she was lying in the Whittington Hospital, just north of Archway Tube, waiting for someone that loved her to come for a visit. There was another reason to sit on the bus too. A lady would have been quick to point it out if she'd been beside me on the small seat, pressing against my leg with her knee. The bus took more time than a cab or a tube train. More time for me to put off the moment where I'd have to slide through the plastic curtain and see her lying in a bed. Time to put off having to speak to a concerned nurse or a junior doctor with a tiredness problem and a dinner engagement. Extra minutes to keep ignoring the sharp tap of the baton on the music stand. Maybe half an hour, 30 or so minutes before I had to stand beside the bed, hold her by the hand and look for something to say that wasn't a wisecrack or a declaration of affection. The nurse who called me had mentioned a concussion and a bang on the nose, but stressed that Lady wasn't in any immediate danger. Not if she found herself a new boyfriend, anyway. I got off the bus outside the slate grey tower block sticking out of the street above Archway Underground Station, and walked as slowly as I could up the hill to the hospital. Like old Dick, I felt the urge to turn back. Lady's eyes were slits, like those on newborn cats. The skin above and below the eyes was a mixture of blue, red and brown, and puffed up at the edges like the brows of an old boxer. The nose looked twice as wide as normal and had a brown stripe of dried blood across it, interrupted by the squash flying knots of some tiny sutures. I took a breath, held it like it was made of a single snowflake, and patted my pocket, the drooling dog hearing the bell go. When I let the air back out, the nurse put a finger to her lips and started to pull the curtain halfway round the bed. She's sleeping now. The nurse wore a shirt and trousers affair and had bright red hair under a black band. Can I sit? I whispered and pointed to a metal chair at the side of the bed. The nurse nodded, smiled, and disappeared behind the curtain. I sat in the chair and looked at Lady's face. She always slept in the same way, with her hands in the praying position between the pillow and her cheeks. The only sign of her breathing came from the slight movement of a striped hospital blanket that looked like it had been yanked off the back of a winner at Kempton Park. I suppose I sat there for 10 minutes or so. It could have been an hour. I wasn't really keeping count. Lady's mouth moved a couple of times, but she didn't stir. I worked on the lump in my throat as I sat, thinking of the hard stone hitting her face. The term broken nose covers a lot of things, but yes, you would call this a broken nose. Not a bad one, mind you. We've got a clear passage, or will have, once the swelling subsides. The rest is pretty trivial, really, a mild concussion and some scrapes. She'll go home tomorrow. The doctor pushed a pair of spectacles back over her blonde hair. She was in her mid-30s, if that, and looked like the wife of a Tory politician. Friendly, free of nonsense, and as brisk as a walk across Dartmoor. And, she waved a clipboard in Lady's direction, I need the bed back. Whitechapel only one. Any questions? Do you know who found her? Afraid not. She looked down at the clipboard and flipped a page over. Nothing here but the paramedic's notes. Semi-conscious, query shock? Probably was. Shock, that is. Whitechapel full, some sort of fracas, the public house next door. Junior doctor, I expect. Her bark indicates something like humour, but I seem to have lost mine somewhere along the archway road. I thanked her and headed back towards my steel chair and vigil. I was halfway down the side of the ward when the clack of coarse steels overtook me. Eddie Scarborough wore a Prince of Wales check suit to go with his noisy brogues, but his face spoiled the look. It was red with a mixture of anger and concern. Those patients who could looked up with craning necks as Eddie let out a swear word that was every bit as loud as it was obscene. Lady's eyes were open, but the swelling made it hard to see in. It's not him snoring, it's you shouting and cursing. What does a girl have to do? Sorry, babe. Eddie looked too big for his small chair, like an adult in a primary school classroom. I just got the note, fucking bastard. Lying on her back, Lady had something like a smile on her face and she put out her hand. In different circumstances, I'd have been miffed that Ed got a squeeze before I did. You're a sweet man, she said. I'm not so bad. Did you get a look then? Ed went straight to the point where I could shut him up. No. I heard a motorbike. Then I was face down onto the pavement. I woke up in the ambulance. How does it look? It'll be fine, darling. I was standing on the other side of the bed. Trivial, the doctor said. Eddie opened his mouth, but I cut him with a raised finger. Lady kept her eyes closed, and I got my turn at the hand-holding. Just rest. I squeezed her hand 3 times, one for each of the small words, and got one in reply. We can talk about what happened another time. Just try and get some sleep. Is there anything you need? Yes, Lady opened one eye. A bit of head's peace. Eddie was bursting to talk, but I took his arm and we walked out of the ward, his metal heel plates clicking angrily on the tiled floor. I don't give a fucking monkeys what you think. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but we've been here before with you and it ain't happening again. Softly, fucking softly, bollocks. Eddie's large arms moved in front of him as though he was about to have a swing at someone. I rather hoped it wouldn't be me. Look, I know how you feel, Ed. We were facing each other across the bonnet of one of Eddie's cars, a silver-coloured, anonymous executive box. I feel it too, more so probably, but what were you thinking of doing? This could be an accident, but even if it's not, I haven't got any ideas as to who this is. I can make some guesses, but nothing like a name or a description. Some old queen talking about a big nose, there's not much to go on. Don't care. He wore the look of a kid whose catapult had been confiscated. I'm going to have a gander myself, don't care what you do. He opened the driver's door and reached in behind the seat. And this will sort it out, mate. Mark my fucking words, Slim. He brandished a Louisville Slugger baseball bat with one hand. In his paw, it didn't look that large, but I wouldn't have welcomed a tap with it. Ed, do you think she wants that? You aren't listening, Slim. I don't fucking care. He didn't even offer me a lift. I took the same bus north next morning. In the reception area, I picked up Lady, some small bottles of analgesics, and a minicab driver wearing a football shirt and enough hair gel to make a sheep look slick. The taxi driver didn't say a word on the trip down the Archway Road. We drove through Tufnell Park, Camden Town, past a succession of kebab shops, minicab offices with revolving yellow lights and 24-hour supermarkets. Lady held my hand and sat in the back seat with her seatbelt across her. The car radio was tuned to a phone-in program discussing bringing back national service, and I could see the driver nodding his head at each mention of birching, square bashing, and ending violence by giving young men guns and training in unarmed combat. I tried to picture myself in a serge uniform holding a rifle, but the image wouldn't stick. In Ladies Road, just opposite the old churchyard, the taxi driver double parked and hopped out to get the near side door, showing an unusually solicitous nature. When I handed him a 10 and a 5 to cover the fare, he winked at me. Drive you to it sometimes, don't they, mate? He'd lowered his voice, but not quite enough. You just lost the tip. Lady snatched the 5 out of his hand, her bruised eyes shining, you ignorant fucking bollocks. His mouth was open, but nothing came out. I smiled for the first time in a day or two as she marched up her path, fussing in her bag for the front door keys. Slim, I don't even like to talk about it, being men and all that guff, but it's about love. Lady was sitting on her tiny settee, legs tucked under the tartan blanket. How so? I perched on the edge of the armchair, ready to spring forward if she needed me. He loves you, Ed does. And he's fond of me too, but it's really about you and him, isn't it? I have nothing to say to that. He's a doer too, which doesn't really help. So when someone like me or you gets hurt, he has to do something. And he isn't a procrastinator, like some people we know. So the big idiot is off in his silly big car with his shillelagh and his aggression, because he loves you. But I don't want him to do it. It isn't going to help, and I don't want someone's block knocked off on my behalf. It doesn't matter what you want, Slim. That's the thing about love. It needs an expression, and it isn't always directed towards what the recipient wants. Like the W.B. Yeats book. It was Lady's turn for a first-time smile. That year, I bought her a Valentine's present of a book of poems. She had about as much interest in poetry as I did in Pilates, but something convinced me it was an ideal gift. Exactly, exactly like the Yeats book. She smiled and closed her eyes. I was about to say something about treading softly. The lady seemed to be sleeping. Either that or she didn't want to hear it again. The silver car passed me outside the flat. Through the windscreen, I could see Eddie's face scrunched around the cigar that almost touched the glass in front of him. If there was any love in his expression, he was hiding it pretty well. I saluted and got the merest hint of a nod in return. I watched the car turn into Gray's Inn Road and head north towards King's Cross. As I reached the corner myself, I saw Barclay Lloyd's Spavin gate moving away from Ashish's shop. I'd left a message on his machine about Lady. And he, in the same way as Eddie, was doing his bit. I caught up with him at the end of the street and touched the sleeve of his coat. His eyes widened behind the smeared lenses of his tortoise-shell spectacles. She's fine, mate. I shook his hand. A bit of a bash-out, which had been hiding the makeup mirror for a few days, but nothing permanent. The relief is most welcome. I can cannot tell you how concerned I was. Barclay was another man, different from Eddie in more ways than I could count. The only violence he relished was in the letters page of the Times Literary Supplement, or spreading oils across canvases in Trafalgar Square. Maybe he was expressing his love too. I filled him in on the sparse details of Lady's downfall while he stood and fiddled with a plastic bag, begging an admonishment to eat more fruit. When I'd finished the infill, Barclay looked up and down the street. You may be right. It might indeed be an accident. That hardly moves the investigation anywhere, does it? Detective Inspector White kept his love very well concealed and answered his telephone with a normal billy goat attitude. He didn't quite put the phone down on me, but it sounded like a close-run thing. So, he said in a bored voice when I told him about the road traffic accident. Well, you don't think it a little odd, I tapped on my pad, that I get walloped in the park and then she gets one in the back a few weeks later? You want me to draw it out for you? Bollocks, came the considered reply. You're a pain in the arse for half the town, and she works with those slags and their low-life husbands. Not a big deal for one of them to get knocked. I took a couple of deep breaths, held them for a few beats, and thought about rage. Mr. White, you're a treasure. No one need to worry about Jermaine Greer giving it all up. Who's he then? White laughed nastily, and the phone clicked in my ear. The office looked dark, even though it was only 3 PM. I turned on the lamp on my desk, which threw a splash of yellow light across my blotter. I spent some time writing notes and drawing circles. It didn't really move anything forward, but it gave me something to do other than worrying about how Lady was feeling and what Eddie Scarborough might be doing.
Thank you.